Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Steve Pardo of Skew Sound, and it's really great to meet you.
Likewise, really great to meet you too, Kate.
You know, I'm really looking forward to talking with you about your soundtrack for Signs of the Sojourner, a game from Echo Dog Games. Last month, it was nominated for Best Storytelling for the Golden Joystick Awards, so congratulations about that.
Yeah. Congratulations to the team specifically. I think they're much deserved, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. And it seems like this game was such a good fit with what you do with Skew Sound, because you tell stories with music, and the stories in Signs of the Sojourner are so interesting, the way they unfold.
Yeah, I one of the things that really caught our attention about this game was how they went about telling those stories. You know, normally those conversations that you have with characters and the storylines are delivered to you over kind of casual dialogue systems that you interact with, or you choose your response. And the way that was organized in this game was through the actual game mechanic, the card game mechanic. So just right off the bat, when we were just reading the description of what this game was and how they told their story, we're absolutely fascinated by this premise. And even from when we first started working on the game, they had their demo and they had this mechanic intact, and how profound it was at, you know, just as an initial response of how this card game could actually be a conversation. I've never seen anything quite like it. I think that it's kind of one of these once in a generation kind of games that really just is doing something that no one else has done. And it inspired us music from a musical perspective. Like when I, you know, started putting together like the concept and music and putting together some sketches, I was like, I have to work on this game. I really hope we get the bid, you know. I was like super excited about it. Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it before either. And basically the story is that the character you play, her mother has passed away, but her mother owned a store in this quiet little town of Bartlow, and it's up to the character to go out with a caravan and kind of restock the store and pick things up and talk to all these people on the way. And the conversations don't always go well. I mean, there are a lot of different ways that they can go, but it's such an interesting premise for a story. And so what were some of your like initial ideas for how the music could sound?
Well, normally we try to inject as much interactivity into a game as we plausibly can imagine, because, you know, it's an interactive experience as opposed to a TV show. And we come from Harmonix Music Systems, which is a, you know, really well-known music video game company, specializing in, you know, rhythm action games like Guitar Hero and Rock Band, later on Dance Central. And so, and we all, that's kind of how Skew Sound, how we all got to know each other, is through that environment. So we can't help but try to make that a part of our early conversations. How can we make this music system be more interactive and, you know, aware of the game systems that are currently happening at the time, narrative beats that are happening, how the, you know, the story arc shifts. So we thought that that was how we were going to best kind of use the music to shape the story, when in actuality, the game mechanic was doing so much of that heavy lifting. So, we still did, we had interactive elements of our game, but we actually pulled back a little bit for the sake of just trying to sculpt the environment. So as, you know, like, really making you feel that you're inhabiting a culture with a given history and conflicts, characters and their backstories, and that the music can just be a presence within that culture, the kind of like, you know, a sensory thing, as opposed to like the music being a mechanic.
Thank you.
So like, if we could make you feel as a player like you could smell the aura of the marketplace that you're currently inhabiting, or you know, the smell of the flowers that are in the garden outside of the village or outside of the houses, make you feel present within that culture. That was where we were hoping the music could do its job. So my job as a composer was, okay, well, I just write a bunch of melodies and make it sound appropriate for the time and the place. And, you know, essentially town themes. So it's just a soundtrack full of town themes. And, you know, the cultures and their backstories really helped inform how I approached melodically and harmonically, as well as instrumentation, like how I approached composing and orchestrating these songs for each of these towns.
I think your choice of keeping the ensemble really small really helps, because the whole group of characters that are on the caravan, and then, you know, some of them come and go, and then the people that you meet in the various locations, you know, there's never like a whole crowd of people. So it's almost as if you were traveling with this little band, or like the characters themselves were playing this music as they were on the road. So that small ensemble was like a really great choice. And I'd love to know how you rounded up some of the musicians.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I live in Nashville. And not that that had, I don't want to, like, you know, go about creating a soundtrack just because I want to play with my favorite musicians, you know what I mean? But in this case, you know, it was an opportunity for me to enlist some of my favorite musician people, friends and otherwise, you know, people that I've gotten to know since moving to Nashville. And so that was a really easy sell, because like you were saying, we wanted the music to feel really intimate. The game in and of itself is very handcrafted, hand-drawn art aesthetic. You're engaging with somebody one-on-one almost exclusively throughout the entire game. There's like, you know, you're never really within a crowd. So that intimate feeling I thought was pretty appropriate. And it also, myself and the developers met eye to eye on that. All of their references for me, as far as like styles of music that they could see this game taking on, were small groups, you know, indie rock musicians and jazz musicians, small chamber groups, classical chamber groups. And, you know, my background with like Chicago jazz and indie rock, kind of we met eye to eye really quickly on that stuff. So which isn't always the case, you know. So and also they had heard a lot of my earlier work, and I definitely lean that way as a jazz musician with that kind of background. And so it was like, oh, I just get to make an album, right? Like, I get to put together a band to make an album. You know, now every town has its own aesthetic and culture, you know, history and backstory that we're trying to reinforce with the instrumentation. So I would use, you know, certain instrumentalists for certain tracks. One of my favorite Tennessee jazz guitar players, his name is Mike Baghetta. I enlisted to kind of be the glue that holds the entire thing together. I play electric guitar myself, and I have, you know, certain pedals that I rely on for effects and that kind of thing. But this is his like bread and butter thing, and I just love his creativity. I love how he approaches crafting a sound from nothing. So he's all over the soundtrack. He stands out in certain places like Anka and Romina, where the guitar effects kind of take the forefront. But that's like the glue. And I think, you know, after he came in and did that session, I felt like I really understood where the soundtrack, like how, like the heart of the soundtrack and how it was going to be perceived as like, you know, something that's not just these cultures, but as the entire soundtrack has this identity now.
Thank you.
it feels, you know, very folksy and very, you know, small and jazzy even, you know, maybe a little African influence here and there. But it's this like sound design, guitar and synth backdrop that kind of keeps it a little bit more otherworldly, right? Because we're not saying this is planet Earth. We're not saying this is a specific planet. It's just you don't really know. You just have you can make those assumptions. And so I feel like that's the role that his playing gave to the soundtrack.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you use that as sort of the, I guess, the thread that ties everything mm-hmm. together, because as the player and the caravan are going to all of these different locations, you want each one to have its own unique identity, and yet you want it to sound like it's all part of the same world. So to have that sort of underpinning of the guitar yeah. and the synth is like really important. And I love how you used some really pretty unusual instruments like flute. And Jeremiah Barkas is a cellist with the Videri String Quartet. I've talked with him a few times. And so that was really a cool choice, too.
Yeah, yeah. My wife is a flute player. I utilize her probably too much. but it's like, you know, we love working together. And so I can't help but enlist her support. And I love the way she blends in with the music that I write. And, you know, we kind of feed off of each other creatively as well. And then, you know, Jeremiah, we kind of go way back. We've been doing work together, actually, with the entire Videri String Quartet for a few years now. We did the entire soundtrack for The Magic Circle together. We enlisted them to do some strings for Beat Sports, this, like, really quirky music game with harmonics. And then Jeremiah and other members supported me on a soundtrack called Faded, which is, like, a VR fantasy adventure game. But when I moved to Nashville, I was like, Jeremiah, please, I have to keep working with you. So I kind of nudged him a little bit and got him to get a microphone and get set up for a remote recording. So I'm using him specifically on a ton of stuff. And like to have him kind of being on this soundtrack, I thought was like, I couldn't have it any other way. He shows up in Clifton, which is kind of a more orchestrally treated song with lots of like sweeping chamber string and flutes kind of painting the picture there. And he also is like the main thing that he carries the main theme kind of on his shoulders, as he's wanted to do. He just has like such a romantic sound when he plays and the way he interprets melodies, I just can't get enough of.
Oh, yeah, he's brilliant. I mean, everybody who played on the soundtrack is just absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And what are the instruments that you played that you contributed to the ensemble?
A lot. like I was saying, like this was kind of a chance for me to be in a comfort zone. You know, I'm definitely stretching it at certain points, but as I'm sitting here, I'm in my studio and I have instruments all around me, some of which I play more than others or play better than others. Like I consider myself a woodwind player, specifically a saxophone player. So there's not too much saxophone. I think there's only a little bit of saxophone on this one, but there's a lot of bass clarinet, a lot of clarinet, I play a little flute. Most of the flute is credited to my wife because she's just way better than me at flute. But I attempt to play the cornet. I attempt to play the violin here and there. But then I really relied on electric and acoustic guitars, like what I was saying. So it's a very folky album or folky soundtrack. And I wanted it to feel very folksy as you go from one town to another. Another glue, I would say, to the entire thing is that it feels like it's like you're just going from one town's folk palette to another. It's all very rich in that way. So a lot of banjo, a lot of mandolin, ukulele. There's this other a couple weird instruments that I purchased, like a mandolin charango hybrid. It's kind of got that armadillo back to it, and a dulcimer that I kind of play like a guitar, or almost like an Indian sounding thing, that the way I was strumming it. So I used that on Aldhurst and a couple other places. A challenge is like I'm using all these instruments that are pretty well known, but using them in ways that hint at potentially like alien cultures and, you know, and their conflicts. Like, you know, because like I said, I was saying before, this isn't very earthly. this is kind of otherworldly. So trying to use these known folk instruments in ways that are out of the ordinary. But every once in a while, I'd want to keep it really rootsy and really, like, driving. So I'll pull out the electric bass, pull out, like, a drum set and play it, you know, almost like LCD sound system here and there. Or, like, you know, kind of, like, brushes, like, you know, like a Bon Iver track or something. Percussion, synths, lots of random keyboards. I play accordion on one track. I'm just looking around the room, like, what else did I play? I just threw the entire kitchen sink at the soundtrack because, you know, I wanted that much variety, and I just had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it, and it sounds like it was really made with love. And one of the tracks that's, I wouldn't say it's an outlier exactly, but it's really unique sounding, is Old Marais, because you've got kind of this ancient synth sound going on in there. And so what was it about that location that made that was just like crying out for that instrumentation?
Yeah, that was definitely an odd duck. And it actually took that location specifically took a few revisions to nail down. I had originally seen it as kind of like a really dark, inhibited place, because I think the story of it was that it was like ruins of an old ancient civilization. And so the way I initially saw it was kind of like a drag. You know, like, you're there and it's sad. But I think that the developers wanted us to reinforce that it actually used to be a really thriving place, like a metropolis, right? So so I wanted to keep it dark. It's like it's an underwater level. So, and I found that some of these synths kind of made it feel really heavy, like you were beneath something. So that's why there's that low bass part, which is like a driving Moog, you know, very simple Moog sound. But then there's that main synth part that's, you know, it's like Mixolydian and a little funky. I wouldn't call it like, you know, funkadelic or anything like that. But it definitely leans in that kind of bluesy way, because I wanted it to feel like it did have life at one point, right? There was a culture here. And it also has like a filter on it, and it has some like warbly sounds to make it sound like it's underwater, which it is. It's an underwater town. You know, as I'm saying that, I'm like, is that true?
Well, I didn't get that far in the game, so I'll take your word for it.
It might not. We'll see. Yeah. Regardless, it's revolving around fishing and, you know, the water aesthetic. I think for me, it was like the environment looked very underwater, so I wanted it to feel that way, like that heavy feeling. And I don't know, I probably went a little overboard on its quirkiness, but, you know, it's just like this soundtrack needed a little bit of that. Just like something totally different, out of left field. And like when you stumble upon this location, you're a little surprised. Like, what? Like, I'm dancing to this song? Oh, well.
Thank you.
it's so interesting as you're going to these locations, rather than the game showing you what it looks like and being able to like walk around and look right. around for yourself, there's a narrative describing the town and what it's like there. And so what kind of concept art did the developers give you so that you could get more of a complete picture of what these locations were like?
Well, we were working in real time with the developers as they were bringing environments online, characters online. We were getting the same concept art and finished art that was being put into the game. Like, and for what it's worth, this game was being developed as an open beta. So there was a community of people that could see it being worked on as we were pushing updates. They could see all the latest changes. And whenever we put new music in there, they were checking it out and commenting. So it was a really thriving community in that sense. So, you know, basically whenever a new environment came online, I would get notified about it and like poke and ask the developers like, hey, can you tell me as much as possible about, you know, all the weird quirky things about this place or the feelings that I should know about this place, some of the odd history or the odd characters, the conflicts, so that I can paint a picture musically around like what the main character should be feeling when they enter the place. So even if they're this specific location doesn't have like a literal band playing this literal music off in the background, I wanted to reflect almost like underscore for a TV show or a film where it's like suggestive about how you should feel upon entering this location with these characters. So, you know, kind of a little bit of artistic liberties here and there, but you know, that kind of process worked pretty well for most of these locations. And then every once in a while, whenever they're like, it's very clearly a sad looking place, right? Like Anka for to me felt like a really sad location that, you know, didn't really have any hope left in it, but that would be like there's always hope. So that even though the song is kind of dark and kind of somber, the melody in and of itself is hopeful, you know? So, and that it can be, if you look a little bit deeper into the conversations, you'll start to see why that hope exists there.
Thank you.
very, very, very subtle, but that kind of came as an accident, believe it or not.
Well, that's so cool, though, because you don't want to club people over the head with really what they should be feeling every second. And so it's kind of, it's a really subtle way of just letting things kind of unfold. And the more you know, then the more it kind of makes sense. And you're kind of guiding somebody's perception, but not like hitting them with a sledgehammer about it. So
yeah, I mean, every once in a while it did make sense to hit him with the sledgehammer. Like Aldhurst was known for its like dance parties at night, so the song is literally a dance party. Like, you know, it's got a lot of culture in it too, but it is like pretty much like if there was a band in this town, this is the song they would be playing, right? But then whenever that didn't make sense, it made sense to pull back and be a little bit more atmospheric or suggestive. And those are really fun because it's almost like painting a blank canvas. I mean, we have our toolkit of instruments and melodies that we work from, but you know, I love being in that space of being able to experiment with what is known and tread into the unknown.
Yeah, it must be just really fascinating to kind of get into the characters' heads and kind of live in that world yourself for like a little while. I'm wondering if there were any characters that really stood out that you gave their own kind of musical identity to.
For sure. So, yeah, I mean, every character in the game has a little bit of a signature to it. It's not heavy-handed. It's just like it allows for a little bit of evolution of these songs as you're residing within or playing against opponents in these levels. Otherwise, the song would just be looping, right? And there's not a lot of interactivity, like I was saying before. It's just really, let's have a little bit of momentum as we, you know, rotate from one character to the next. But there were some characters who really needed a little bit of musical help, and specifically Nadine, who was a really tricky character for us because she comes up all the time and her general attitude is kind of mean-spirited, I would say. Like,
she does, she doesn't give you anything. She's the leader of the caravan, and you really have to stay on her good side or she's just going to drop you.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, almost like, you know, the stepmom in Cinderella, where it's just like, she's not going to give you any, you know, patience. She's like, you better get on board with what I have going on or else I'm going to put you up in the cellar, you know? she never really literally does that and, like, leaves. You know, she has, like, a softer side to her, which is really, I thought, really interesting about her character, which you kind of will stumble upon later on in the narrative. And she like, knows your mom from before she passed away. So there's a little bit, there's some secrets, right? And there's a softer side to her. So we ended up using alto flute, and we composed a new melody. Actually, my wife improvised it. She kind of was just playing along to images of her alongside the game and kind of came up with this melody. And I thankfully was hitting record when she came up with it and loved it. And so basically we went through the entire game. Anywhere where Nadine shows up, this little alto flute melody will peer through the soundtrack. don't know if anyone's ever caught it. It's kind of like many things in the soundtrack, kind of subtle. But I think once it got in, we started to hate Nadine much less. It was like, oh, okay, like she's actually not that bad, you know? She's got a softer side. So
yeah, well, maybe your wife, I don't know, sympathized with her more than
perhaps. You. Yeah. Yeah. She's like, I got kids. I know what it's like. Uh-huh. I'm not patient. Yeah.
Well, you know, you mentioned that she improvised the part. So how much of the music was written down, like for the musicians in the recording sessions? And then how much did you just let them, you know, turn them loose and let them improvise?
Right. Well, specifically for Mike Baghetta, who did the guitar effects, that was completely improvised.
Wow.
He has... You know, like many amazing jazz musicians, has just an incredible ear for harmony and didn't really need any guidance at all. I trust him with my musical life. And I knew what he was going to bring to the soundtrack, and he absolutely did. So he came in and, you know, listened to the. I just hit record. He kind of listened the first time, at you know the first loop, and then on the subsequent loop he started improvising. And we did maybe four loops of the entire song, multiple tracks, maybe. So maybe like 12 streams of audio per song from Mike. And I just kind of picked the best ones for the core loop, and then found ones that were had a little bit more character, or had, you know, were doing some interesting melodic or textural things, and utilized some of those for some of our more esoteric characters. That, you know, for like the stems that we can that we use as interactive stems in the game. But his work was completely improvised. But aside from Nadine and a couple of the places, there were a lot of orchestrations throughout the game that were written down, and that we, you know, like when I was working with Jeremiah, when I was working with John and Liz Estes, who are some of our dear friends who live here in Nashville. John is an upright bass player, and Liz is a violin player. A lot of their contributions were through scored music, but both of them also lean jazz. Hmm. Liz specifically is an Irish fiddle player.
Wow.
And so she has a lot of that kind of all over the soundtrack, where if you hear a fiddle improvising, wailing away, I think Aldhurst is kind of like her feature. That's her completely improvising. But John as an upright bass player has that tradition as well. That being said, I had very specific parts for the upright bass, where it's like doubling with the synthesizer or doubling with the bass clarinet. So I would throw him over written down parts as well whenever, you know, it kind of called for something that was very precise. There were a few parts that, like, and this is something all composers have to deal with at some point, where what we write sounds really good with the sample that you have loaded, like the, you know, the sample instrument that you have loaded up in the DAW.
Yeah.
And in whenever you actually have the live performer playing it, they're like, you know, this is impossible, right? Like, you know, even like Ben Street, you know, said New York, you know, savant upright bass player, mm-hmm. can't even do this. Like, no one can do this, Steve. So, but he did it. He did it.
Wow.
Somehow he did it. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's I guess the advantage of working with pros,
absolutely.
Because yeah, they can kind of get their hands around it and get their heads around it. And I've just...
And they're very patient, too. I have some good friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Did the pandemic throw any, you know, monkey wrenches into the recording process?
Well, so most of this soundtrack was actually recorded pre-pandemic. That being said, you know, the pandemic really hasn't affected us too much. I mean, we, as SKU Sound, work remotely and have been working remotely since we started in 2014. We were sort of founded on that principle of like, hey, we all have recording studios in our houses. We can just do this without needing a brick and mortar. And so we've been working on Slack and Zoom and Dropbox and Google Drive and Perforce and Git since day one, you know, and then we all have our own gear. So we don't need to like rent out a studio ever. I don't think we've ever had to do that. That being said, a lot of our instrumental collaborators don't have that. So thankfully, you know, I have portable recording gear. I was able to go, like I visited a percussionist, Philip Patty. He has like a collection of, you know, random percussion instruments from all over the world, you know, djembes and shakers and, you know, knickknacks, all sorts of stuff that's used all over the soundtrack, and was able to capture that. This is, again, pre-pandemic, right? So it was like not a problem. And same with Mike Baghetta. He came over to my studio and we did everything here. So, but then once the pandemic hit, like once I needed some string parts, it was like, well, I have to utilize only the people that I know have recording gear at their home, you know, just first. I mean, I'm sure that there are people doing it and figuring out ways to do it in person, but I just, you know, I'm not going to make that presumption on anyone. So thankfully, Jeremiah, the cello player, a few years ago, we outfitted him with a microphone and recording gear so that he could basically record for us on call whenever we needed a cello. And like, he's my first call cello player and I want to use him on everything. So he was able to, you know, again, this is pre-COVID.
Right.
But still, record remotely. And then, since COVID has sort of taken over the world, I've been using him all over on an upcoming soundtrack. And again, like, we didn't really miss a beat. You know, we're already kind of made to work in this way with, and I think that games in general have sort of been able to crossfade into this methodology fairly without too many hiccups. I know that there's orchestras, that's not the story for them. You know, a lot, you know, kind of in a lots of sad stories that I've heard from here in Nashville, you know, with some of the local orchestras not really being able to sustain themselves. But as far as just like in general, the game industry, you know, it's software, right? Mm-hmm. So we can operate, as long as we all have internet access, you know, we can do most of our jobs. And thankfully, like I said, you know, with QSound, we all have studios. So, you know, not having to rely on booking anywhere externally.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that must have been a big relief to not have to all of a sudden be scrambling for getting the music recorded in the middle of all of this. And
it would have been very tough. For this project too, given our collaborators, it would have been tough.
Yeah, for sure. Well, backing up a little bit, I'm just curious about how you get started with a project like this. I mean, do you just sit at a keyboard and noodle around, or I don't know, how do you get started?
Well, I first just really want to get to know the developers. I want to know who they are, just what their personalities are like and what their backgrounds are and what their experience has been with other composers and other, just so I have a general sense of, you know, how they like to work and what their expectations might be from me. I want to know if they know my previous work. I want to know if they like have the technical expertise on their team in order to implement their sounds, or are we going to be implementing our sounds? So kind of like those are my first initial preliminary questions. And then we talk about the project, and I want to know as much as I can, like the most intricate technical, nerdy details about the story, about the characters, about the environments, about the toolkits that they have that they're working with. I want to know if there's any expectations for the music, if there's stuff that they like, if they've never thought about music for this game. I want to know what kind of music they like. Or you know, conversely, what they don't like. If they hate country music, if they hate metal, if they hate EDM, I want to know that, because then we'll steer clear, right? We want everyone to kind of be on the same page as early as possible, just from like, okay, are we all in the, you know, are we feeling the same way about what this game should do, what like the story it's telling, and what the music's role is? And then after that, it's usually just I write one thing, and it ideally is the main theme. And, you know, kind of coming up with the motif or the melody that's going to persist one way or another throughout the entire game. And in the case of Signs of the Sojourner, that was in the context of a release trailer. And so I basically scored to this trailer using this melody, thinking the whole time, like, okay, this actual assignment is going to be serving a lot of use cases for this project. It's going to... How's the main theme? It's going to basically determine the instrumentation for the entire game. And it's going to serve as like a launch point for the development relationship between SKUSound and Echo Dog, right? It's doing a lot of crazy things.
That's a big lift, yeah.
yeah. Oh, I mean, and that's you know, for one-off projects, there's still those stresses, but they're one-off projects. Whereas this is the first assignment of many for this project. The first like thing to have to do that's going to determine the remainder of the development relationship. So thankfully it went off without a hitch. Like they loved the melody. They were a little surprised by it. I think that one of the two developers who had like input on the music was a little surprised that I think she was expecting something that was like very synthetic. And so we talked about that. We're like, well, should we go there? Should we go with like something more synthetic as opposed to like a folk backdrop? And I think we came to the conclusion that the acoustic nature felt fit really well with the feeling that you as the player are want like should be feeling. You should feel comfortable. You should feel like I know this place. And then as you go throughout the game, as you venture out past your hometown, you're being surprised. And that's where stuff starts, like similar to the game mechanic, where there's surprises along the way and you know, you find yourself like not having successful conversations, that the music can kind of throw you off a little bit too here and there. So you start in a comfortable place, and as you move farther away, it starts to feel a little alien and out of place. And so once we, like, after that initial trailer assignment, it was just like, it felt free. You know, like we still, like I was saying before, whenever a new environment would come online, we would talk about it a little bit, but you know, that feeling of trust worked out, right? And this doesn't happen with every project. Sometimes the trust has to be continually worked on, and you know, you have some debates about this or that thing. But with Echo Dogs and the team and with this game, it felt like really natural. And it ended up feeling like, I don't know if I said this before, but it made me, I would just end up feeling like I was making an album for myself.
Yeah.
You know? So that's unusual. Yeah. It doesn't always happen that way. I mean, I try to input a little bit of my personal aesthetic into every project that I do. I can't help it. But this one was that unique, where it really felt like, oh man, I'm really just making music that I would be making otherwise. You know, it felt like an opportunity to do something on work time, you know, as opposed to like the weekends.
Oh, that's so cool. That's really awesome. What kind of feedback did you get from the people who were playing the open beta? And I wonder if you know, were you able to adapt your music to their suggestions? Or, I mean, I'm kind of wondering what that sort of dialogue was like.
You know, I can definitely say it with all humility, but like, you know, they got it. They loved it.
Wow.
So I didn't really feel like I had to respond, you know, tonally in any given way. I didn't really have to make any adjustments. And which is, I think that, you know, with a vocal community, you always kind of fear that a little bit. Like, are they gonna, especially when you make changes, like if they're used to a way like a song sounds, and it's, even if it's like a demo version and it's been in there for a year, if you change that mix a year later, they're gonna be super angry. It used to be perfect. Why did you change it? So we thankfully didn't have that problem. You know, we only put stuff in the game and when it was like ready for people to listen to it, and it was relatively finished. But no, I mean, there was, I would say most of the back and forth was from the developers as we were going about it. I mean, like I said before, it was a very freeing experience working with these guys, and they trusted me and I trusted them. But every once in a while, there'd be a song like Old Murray, or, you know, maybe I'd throw in a couple versions of it sounding completely off their expectations, right? So that's where most of the back and forth was, which I think is kind of par for the course. I mean, so yeah, I mean, long story short, like, not too much community back and forth on the music. I think that the community generally understood it and liked it. So
yeah, well, that's always a good place to start, too.
It's a sigh of relief, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because really, yeah. I mean, you must feel like you're under a microscope, knowing that people are playing the game before it's even finished. And
in a way, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that I've done this plenty of times now, where I'm so used to a community, and I want to make sure that like the idea is being sold, but I come from like the harmonics world, right? Rock Band and Guitar Hero specifically. I mean, I don't want to talk trash about anybody, but like, I'm used to a very vocal and demanding community. That's all I'll say about that. You know?
And they exist for just about every game, which is, you know, gotta be intimidating for developers, I would think.
I think it's probably more so in this case, like Echo Dog with what they were trying to do with this game. I mean, they really were doing something creative that no one's really done before. And I think we're, you know, throughout the development process, like, you know, asking themselves, like, oh, is this idea going to work? Like, do people get it? And, you know, among other questions, like, is this game too hard, or is this game too easy, or should there be more missions, or should there be a UI thing? And that's where a lot of the focus was within the community, which I think is warranted. Like, you want your, like, if the tone of the game and if the idea of the game is so new and so strong, then you want that environment, the wrapper of it, to kind of be invisible, right? And if it's invisible, then the player can focus on the mechanic and what makes that so unique. And then, you know, after halfway through, if it's succeeding, then halfway through, a player can be like, oh, I love this art. Oh, I love these characters. Oh, I love this music. You know, like, that, those kinds of responses can happen a little bit later. And I think that in this case, like, that you know, the community recognized that, and they really loved the premise of the game, and that's the kind of conversation that was happening.
Wow. Just all in all, it sounds like it must have been just such a fantastic project to work on. And I mean, we've covered a lot of stuff, but is there anything that I missed that you'd like people to know?
I think, like, out of anything, you know, SKUSound, we do a lot of different stuff, right? And we're, with every project that gets pitched to us or that folks want our involvement in, we try to bring this level of excitement to that project. And I think for the most part, we do. You know, when we collaborate, especially as a team, not just like me doing as composer with this company, but like us as SKUSound, all four of us bringing what we have to a given project, I think that there's a level of invigoration that happens. There's we're inspired to like bring what we think we have to offer to a given project, and really helps sculpt the environment and the story and the mechanic with audio. Because I think, you know, it's not a secret. Like, audio is really powerful, right? Music is really powerful. So specifically with Sojourner, it really felt like all the knobs were turned up in that way. Like, we were really able to, I wouldn't call it a comfort zone, but just like a creative space where like we could just unleash that kind of energy onto a given project and have developers that wanted that too, that were excited about that and were pushing us to do better and to be better and to help paint their project. So, you know, regardless of like what stage a developer is at, whether they're indie or AAA, or whether they want something that's fully interactive or something that's just telling a story, we want to bring that kind of methodology to a given project. But it was really, really special to get to do it for Sojourner, which in and of itself had like such a fantastic development team and such a fantastic premise, especially given the state of the world, you know, pandemic. A game about like communication through a card game, I think, has a lot of just metaphors that are still left to be explored, and ways that this game mechanic is still like hitting people.
Yeah, I love it. It's relaxing and it's so simple, and the music is just such a fantastic fit. And Steve, it's been so much fun to talk with you about it. Thank you so much.
Likewise,
for your time.
Likewise, Kate.
Yeah.
Likewise, thank you so much for your time. It's really a pleasure.
Well, I hope we get to do it again soon.
Absolutely, yeah.